Welcome to the healing power of your dreams here on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, dream expert Teresa Chung, and each week, along with recurring dream guest hosts Margarita Mitchell Pollock and Kelly Sullivan Walden, plus a special guest or two, we will dive deep into the out of this world ways your intuition by day and your dreams by night can guide, heal, and inspire you from the inside out. Expect insights, surprises, and the kind of healing wisdom that only your dreams can reveal. So join us live each week and let's discover the unexpected together. Love is the one thing we're capable of perceiving that transcends dimensions of time and space. Maybe we should trust that, even if we can't understand it. Those words are from Interstellar, my favorite movie of all time. And if you haven't seen it yet, dear dreamers, I truly invite you to do so. It's not just science fiction. It's a meditation on the healing power of love, time and consciousness, and whatever may lie beyond. That quote from Interstellar has always stayed with me because it dares to suggest something radical, that love is not just an emotion or a survival mechanism, but evidence of a consciousness, a soul that can transcend time, space, and even death itself. And I believe dreams belong in that same category. Because dreams, like love, are not disposable. They don't disappear when circumstances change or when people leave our lives. They don't die. They transform. They evolve. They move through us and sometimes beyond us, carrying meaning we don't yet have language for. Today's conversation is about that deeper truth, the healing power of love, the wisdom of dreams, and what happens when science meets mystery instead of trying to explain it away. And never before has it been more important for us to have these kinds of spiritual conversations. We are living in dark times, with the Epstein files, with faith in the establishment eroding, with trust in politicians and even hair care professionals evaporating. It can feel overwhelming. Over here in the UK, our royal family is facing scrutiny as never before, and rightly so. And yet, during times of darkness and danger, when we don't know how the world can ever go back, when so much bad seems to be happening, as I said, never before has it been more important for us to hold on to the belief that the world can change for the better. To quote from my beloved Lord of the Rings, never has it been more important for us to believe that there is good in the world and that good is worth fighting for. And the key word there is fight. I truly believe that people with sensitive, intuitive souls who know how to heal from the inside out must stop hiding now and start fighting for what is right, compassionate, and kind. We need you in government, in education, in global leadership, and in medicine, not standing on the sidelines, not retreating into isolation or disappearing into endless meditation circles. We need you to be where the decisions are made. We need you to walk your talk. And for me, 2026 marks the year of a great reset in spiritual activism. And I am in total agreement with my beautiful recurring dream co-hosts, Margarita and Kelly, that this show must be the change in spiritual momentum that it wants to see, must use the incredible platform of UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station, to set itself apart and start talking about what truly matters. And that is why I am deeply honoured to be joined today by someone who brings extraordinary weight, compassion and clarity to this conversation. Someone who is not only speaking about change, but actively making a difference in the field of medicine. Someone who is walking and living and breathing his spiritual beliefs, and not just talking about them, but integrating them into his work and doing what really matters. Dr. Adam Rizvi is a critical care specialist, a neurologist, teacher, and writer whose work lives at the intersection of medicine, healing, and the deeper truths of human experience. He is the acclaimed author of Love Does Not Know Death, a profoundly moving spiritual memoir exploring death, dying, forgiveness, and the miracles that emerge when we meet suffering with presence and radical acceptance. Drawing on clinical insight, non-dual spirituality, and contemplative traditions, Adam reminds us that healing does not always come from fixing, but from remembering what has always been whole. Adam, welcome to the healing power of your dreams. It's a joy to have you here.
It's a joy to be here, Teresa. It's lovely. And what an insightful and inspiring intro.
Tough question now, but you would expect nothing less after that
Nothing less.
intro. We do seem to be living in dystopian times at the moment. War, division, cruelty, fear, ignorance, truth blurring with reality everywhere we look. From where you stand, where is the love in the world right now that you write about, and how can we find it?
You made two references to very pivotal cultural creations. You talked about Tolkien and Lord of the Rings, and you talked also about Interstellar. And if you look at those two stories, the stories start in very dark times. And I think the story of the hero of the heroine always starts in that kind of moment. And that, to answer your question, I feel like that this light, the love that brings about the change and transformation, it's always right here. It's always now, and it's always within. And I think if we recognize that and we don't try to hunt for it outside of ourselves, that's the beginning of the journey.
Thank you. That's a beautiful, beautiful answer. And but in the medical profession, is there talk of love, of consciousness? I mean, you are an exception to the rule, and I would like to know how you are perceived among your peers with this powerful message of the power of love.
Well, if you would have asked me that many years ago, I would have said it's not talked about in medicine. But I'm noticing a change. I'm noticing there's more dialogue about this. There's more engagement. And more importantly, I realized I had to change my own filters of what this looks like. For example, people may not use the word consciousness or love per se, but we feel kindness when we see it. We see a healthcare provider engage wholeheartedly with a family who's facing something difficult, and they bring presence. And nurses notice, other physicians notice. They notice when you talk about the patient, about what you feel needs to be done. There's sort of a level of caring. Like truly caring for the outcome and the well-being of someone who comes into the hospital that we don't always see. So when we see that love show up, we might not have words for it, but we're noticing it. And it's always been there. But I think there's a deeper exploration of it. I also notice in terms of the conversations around consciousness and this so-called hard problem of consciousness. Is consciousness a byproduct of the firings of the brain, or is it something that exists independent of the physical body? That conversation is happening in the hospital, in the clinic. It's not often, but I've had that conversation a couple of times and have been very surprised by the open-mindedness I've seen. And that's very different from where things were 20 years ago, 10 years ago even.
Brilliant. And I guess shows like this and UK Health Radio have played a part in opening minds and hearts to this possibility that consciousness can exist independent from mind and body. But working so closely as you do, Adam, with critically ill patients, have you witnessed moments that challenged your own conventional medical understanding, moments that felt transcendent?
Yeah, it more times than I can count. I have, and you know this, Teresa, but part of the genesis of my book, Love Does Not Know Death, actually first came from a journal that I kept, and I call it my death journal. But I started it in fellowship, where I started to see a lot of death. But at first I wanted to capture each patient who I was physically present for when they died, as a way of honoring them. And I write the things that happened leading up to their death, and then I write how they died, and then I write the things I noticed, the things I experienced, I felt, my emotions around the whole process, and I offer a prayer for them, a prayer of well-being, of well-wishing for them and their families. And I just put that all in the journal. Now, at first, the journal started off being my way of coping with the intensity of death, and a way of acknowledging and honoring the patients. But then I started to have really wild experiences of patients dying, and I would capture that in the journal too. And I have a little over 500 deaths now that I've captured in this journal, and many of the deaths that I've captured have remarkable stories. Now, not all the stories made it to the book, but there's a ton of stories there that, if I had read this earlier on in my medical career, or I think if many other physicians have tried to read it, they would notice there are some peculiarities in some of the stories.
Would you mind sharing something transcendent that you experienced?
Yeah, well, this is when I learned about a lot of the death and near-death literature. I didn't know most of this, so when I experienced it for the first time, it was quite shocking. But later on, I realized, oh no, this happens all the time. It's very frequent. One such thing is something called terminal lucidity, which can show up in many different ways. But in the way that I think I first experienced it, it was a patient who was near comatose, essentially unresponsive from multi-organ failure. All they could do was breathe, basically. They would moan or groan at best, and they had been that way for days. And this particular patient that I'm recalling, I think they had liver failure. And so part of liver failure is the toxins that normally the liver is processing and clearing start to build up in the blood, and in particular ammonia. And these toxins build up so much so that the brain can't function. The brain starts to swell, and the patient slips into a coma. And I recall about a little under 24 hours before the patient actually passed away, the patient just woke up. They sat up in bed, and they looked around, and they said, "Oh, hey, John." I forget the name of the patient's son. He looked at his son, and he looked at his family around him, and they were stunned. And the nurse called me in, and they said, "Doctor, doctor, Dr. Rizvi, he's awake." And he held a conversation. He said, "Hello, hi, how are you?" Only to fall back into a coma and then pass away hours later. And I wonder sometimes what is happening there. I'll share one other story, similar terminal lucidity in a patient with severe end-stage Alzheimer's, dementia. This patient, the Alzheimer's was so advanced, it was a woman, so advanced, she couldn't talk, she couldn't swallow, she had forgotten how to use her muscles of swallowing, and so she would aspirate, and aspiration means the saliva goes down the wrong tube into the trachea, in the lungs. And we were watching her basically take her last few breaths. And she also had this moment of terminal lucidity where she just woke up, eyes open, sat up in bed, and she asked for some tea. And she was talking to her daughter. Everyone was crying because they're like, oh my God, grandma's back, right? And she then started. I remember I walked over to say hi, and this was the amazing part. She turned to an empty chair and started talking to her mom, who had long since passed away. This is a some this is the patient is an 80-year-old woman who has Alzheimer's, and she is talking to her own mother, who has long since passed away, and saying, oh, hi, mom. And we all watched as she had maybe four or five back and forth conversations. It wasn't rambling, it wasn't delirium, it wasn't like she was saying random things. We were watching a normal, sane, first of all, the fact that she has end-stage dementia and is having a sane conversation. And then second of all, that she's having this conversation with someone that we don't see, but that everyone in the family knows was her mother, was striking. Most of the nurses, most of the team, we didn't we were at a loss for what was happening. Having heard of these stories just recently, I just assumed there was way more happening than I could physically see. And there were likely more beings in the room than I could see at that time. So those are some of the things that I've noticed.
Astonishing, and I hate it. We've got to go to an ad break now. But before that, would you mind? We're going to play a few bars of a song that you mention in your book that was very meaningful with one of the stories. Would you mind just explaining the importance of that? And then we can play a little bit of it before we go to the ad break and
Oh,
see
sure.
people on the other side.
Yes. Well, this is a tribute to my professor, my comparative religion professor, Paul Muller Ortega. I studied with him at the University of Rochester at his class called Death, Dying, and Beyond. And he would play this song at the beginning of every class as a way to bring us back to the potentially lighthearted and loving way that we can look and appreciate death. And so I always came into that class wanting to learn more about the ways that I can grow spiritually from contemplating death. And this song, I think, appropriately lightened the mood and helped me see what death was really about.
Okay, this one's for Gabby.
That makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Wake up, everyone. It's the healing power of your dreams, your weekly must listen on UK Health Radio. And I'm delighted now to invite my recurring dreams co-host, Sunday Times journalist and TV producer, Margarita Mitchell Pollock, to join the conversation now, bringing her insight, curiosity and deep feel for the stories beneath the surface. Over to you, Margarita.
Thank you so much, Teresa, and thank you for opening such a beautifully profound show. I don't know about you guys at home, and at the moment I think there's about 70,000 listeners tuning into our show, and I just wanted to thank you, Teresa and Johan, for bringing this all together, because there's a lot of like-minded souls out there and they're tuning in and they're listening to what we have to say with these amazing guests. And Adam, I don't know about you, but today I feel like I need some of your calm energy. I opened the news this morning and I think my heart broke 1,000 times at what I'm reading and seeing. I think sensitive people all over the world are just being broken by, you know, the Epstein files and trauma after trauma that we're witnessing. And I think I want to ask you, because your energy is so powerful, so beautiful, I feel like, have you got anything that you could recommend our listeners, or even just to help me in this moment, to navigate some of the horrors that we are seeing on our news every day as we try and live our daily lives while also trying to facilitate some of these horrors?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, Margarita, thank you for bringing voice to probably what the majority of everyone here is feeling. You know, when I'm in the ICU and I have someone who is actively dying and a family who is at bedside hoping for the best, and I have to go in there and I have to tell them your loved one has multi-organ failure, they likely won't make it, or giving them a diagnosis that's terminal. There are moments in life where everything falls apart, where the grief, the heaviness is so intense. And I think what happens is we want to run away from it. Mm-hmm. We want to ignore it. We want to repress it. We want to maybe try to fix it. We want to, there's sort of a pain with moments like this. And what I tell these families when I give them this news, and what I do when things fall apart in my world, is I just be with what is. That nothing needs to be fixed right now. Nothing needs to be changed. Nothing needs to be taken action upon. You know, we can, I think we can all learn to be more gentle with each other and mostly gentle with ourselves. So when the proverbial shit hits the fan for me, and it sometimes does, my wife has a pretty bad autoimmune condition, and sometimes things happen for her where we have to go to the hospital, and we're worried for the worst. It's in those moments I just have to stop, go within, and I tell myself, whatever is, it's okay. And there's sort of this resting that happens. And I noticed that some of the patients and the families who make the greatest progress towards moving towards the acceptance of their loved one passing away are the families that do this. If tears come, they let the tears come. If rage comes at what's happening, they scream. I've seen families scream. I've seen them howl. I've seen them throw things against the wall. They let themselves feel what they need to feel. There's no resistance. And I think that's the key, Margarita. Don't resist what's arising in the moment. Let it come as it is, raw and naked. And then I think if we give ourselves the space to let that come up, we'll realize there's a ground underneath all of that chaos that does not move. It's a ground of absolute peace and stillness that we can find. But it takes time and it takes a total allowing.
Yeah, I love that. You're absolutely right. I think when you were talking, I was thinking about how us here in Britain, and the Brits are not great at getting in touch with their emotions. They a lot of the time we suppress things, we push them down, we don't allow ourselves to feel things. And then you find yourself getting irritated and you've got road rage and traffic and you're in the supermarket and you're angry and you've got no idea why. And I think just allowing yourself to feel the feelings, like just today, I just felt when I read the news, I was just overwhelmed with it, but also not allowing it to paralyze you, I think. So when you're bombarded with things, not allowing yourself to shut down, to, like you said, processing it, allowing it to work through you. And I think with Valentine's Day is on Saturday, and I was so delighted to see you our guest today, because I was thinking, Valentine's Day is a beautiful day about love. But the thing is, people forget maybe that haven't lost loved ones what it is to have pain on Valentine's Day, to grieve people that you are missing, and whether that's a child, a partner, or even a best friend, or even an animal, the grief that can come from losing an animal. And I wanted to introduce another lady into our show today, Vanessa May. She's a grief therapist. I know she's really excited to speak to you, Adam, because this is a lady who has had more than her fair share of grief and trauma in her life. In the short space of 2.5 years, Vanessa lost her son, her father, and her husband. Vanessa, I know that you'd like to speak to Adam and ask him some questions. Please, could you let us know how you're doing this Valentine's Day and how you're surviving life at the moment? Hats off to you, darling.
Thank you. Well, it's an ongoing process, grief. If you lose your child, you're not going to ever get over it. If you have multiple losses again, it's going to make things a lot more complicated. I've written books about grief, and I talk about the two things that have helped me survive. Are basically finding meaning and purpose and helping others, and also my spiritual belief that my son and my husband are around me. So yeah, I'm interested, Adam, to hear your work. I think it's great to know there's a doctor who has these beliefs because it's to me it's second nature now to just know that my loved ones are around me, But at the same time, I'm very mindful, because I work particularly with bereaved parents, that this is a catastrophic loss, and you can strive for peace, but you know what? It's difficult. It's incredibly challenging. So I do my very best to avoid any sort of toxic positivity or spiritual bypassing, even though I have this belief, and that's what's helped me to survive. But yeah, I'm fascinated to hear you talk today.
Thank you, Vanessa. Yeah, you are far more of an expert, I would say, than I am. I don't have the training in terms of grief and therapy and managing that. So I defer to you. I do notice, though, in the hospital and in the ICU, this tendency for not only healthcare providers, but everyone really, other family members, to what's the word? Maybe to use your word, bypassing, to not really sit with the intensity of the emotion. But sometimes we say phrases like, "Don't worry, you'll see them soon on the other side," or "It's okay, they're still here, they're with you." Yes, all of that may be true. I certainly believe that's true, but subtly underneath that. And maybe this is not the intention for most people, but underneath those words is the phrase, what you're feeling is not okay, and you need to get over it. And that's, I think that's the key for us to give ourselves permission. If you have a family member who is still grieving, or the intensity of the grief is so much, that's okay for them. In fact, everything is okay. Let however this moment arises be what it is. I think that's more important than the platitudes.
I agree, and we live in a very grief-averse society, and people don't like to confront their own deaths, their loved ones dying, particularly when it comes to losing a child. It's every parent's worst nightmare. So people will cross the road rather than speak to someone. So I think you're absolutely right. We have to sit with the pain. It's really, really uncomfortable. Very, very uncomfortable. It's the hardest thing most people will ever have to do, is lose a loved one. But there's this rush to move to acceptance, to get over it. You never get over certain losses. You have to integrate them into your life, but never push it away, because otherwise, my background is as a nutritional therapist, and understanding, and in my books, I talk about how the body is affected by grief. So we have to, and you as a doctor will know, we have to be very careful. If we push the grief down, then the body keeps the score and people get cancer. The research I uncovered about bereaved parents and widows in particular, far more likely to have a heart attack, to get cancer. Broken heart syndrome is a thing, isn't it? You will know the actual, I can't remember what it's called.
Nagatsubo.
Yes. And people just kind of think it's an expression, going, oh, he died of a broken heart. Well, people do. I think my husband died of a broken heart for our son. So,
How did your husband pass, Vanessa, if I may ask?
Sorry, say that
How
again.
did your husband pass?
He died of COVID.
Okay, I'm so sorry. And how old was your son when he passed?
24.
Four. And where are you now in your grief journey? How, I mean, day by day, I take it, step by step.
Yeah, I mean, compound losses are complicate things. It takes much longer, really. And both losses were very traumatic. So the trauma means my nervous system, I have to really work at trying to keep it regulated. But I work daily with bereaved mothers, widows, people who've lost parents, siblings. And I'm going back to what we were saying. My work is to normalize it, and when people around them are wanting them to get over it and get back to normal, I provide a space for them to still be with it and acknowledge the pain that remains for a very long time. Even if it softens, it does soften, it does change, but it doesn't necessarily go away completely.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Vanessa, for joining us today. I know there'll be a lot of people there that, whether they're freshly bereaved or if it's been years and it feels like yesterday, will hear your words and Adam's words and have comfort today, especially with Valentine's Day. It can be very triggering for very many people, and I don't know if people realise that. I'm going to take it to another ad break now, my loves, but we're going to pass you over afterwards to Dr. Dream Kelly. And I just wanted to send everyone all my love and all of our 70,000 listeners, and to you, Adam and Vanessa. Thank you with gratitude for joining us today.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healing Power of Your Dreams here on UK Health Radio. And this conversation is so profound. This is Kelly Sullivan Walden, Dr. Dream, by the way. I'm so grateful to be among these dream girls, Teresa Chung and Margarita Mitchell Pollock, and you, Johan. but wow, I notice as I'm hearing this conversation, I have a circus going on inside me from all the pain and loss I've gone through. My biggest pain is that I lost a daughter. It was going to be an adopted daughter, and I only knew her for 2 weeks. She was just an infant. But there's something about that pain that I feel it cracked me into another place, because everything, every platitude that I had ever used first to give to somebody else when they were suffering loss didn't work for myself. Every spiritual book, every spiritual teacher, nothing worked during my grief. And I was left adrift. And then I finally opened up, and Viktor Frankl was the only one that could meet me where I was hurting. And as I listened to you, Vanessa, and as I listened to you, Dr. Adam Rizvi, I feel like you, there's a Viktor Frankl-esque energy about you. I would go to you. I wish I had known about you during those times that I was struggling, because the fact that you survived, the fact that you find purpose is so inspiring. So I think what I'm curious about, before we let you go, Vanessa and Adam, we're still going to be talking to you a little bit. I just want to know a couple do's and don'ts. What should people not do around Valentine's Day? Tell us what they shouldn't do for somebody who is recently bereaved.
Don't ignore your friend or whoever it is who is missing, particularly obviously a partner, but a child as well, anyone anyone at all, a parent, because there are so many memories going back around Valentine's Day and we go back to them. I would take for granted that my husband would always give me roses. You took it for granted. I don't now. So I'd say just kind of go, I know this must be a hard day for you, thinking of you. A text with a heart emoji, that kind of thing. Really simple, non-invasive. You're not intruding. Something simple like that.
That's
Just an acknowledgement.
an acknowledgement. That's great. And Dr. Adam Rizvi, do you have a do or a don't? People should do or don't, or give us one of each during times of grief, since you have such wisdom on this topic.
That's a good question. Yeah, I would echo what Vanessa said. Don't ignore and use every opportunity. Let inspiration and creativity guide you, but use every opportunity to be kind to others. Most of us are fighting a hard battle, and kindness is there's more of that's needed every day.
Yeah, we can double down on the kindness. Well, that's wonderful. I'm excited to bring on Richard Cox and introduce him to this conversation. Let me tell you a little bit, just a tiny bit about him. Richard Cox is the host of Deep State Consciousness podcast, where he explores hidden narratives, consciousness expansion, and the unseen forces shaping both personal and collective reality. His work invites listeners to question appearances and tune into deeper layers of awareness beneath the headlines. So, Richard Cox, this might seem like a strange pairing, but I think it's actually perfect because whenever we're talking about death and dying, we're kind of going beyond the Matrix. We're going beyond the Truman Show. Teresa referenced a couple popular films in pop culture. So the Matrix and the Truman Show are big ones for me, kind of going beyond what is supposed to be and who we really are. So in this conversation about grief, death, and dying, what's your perspective as somebody who goes beneath the common narrative?
Thank you, Kelly. That sounds a lot like the kind of intro Teresa writes for me when I go on her show, and she always makes me sound very, very good. So I just don't know if it was, but it sounds like that.
She writes the best intros,
It's
doesn't
a
she? Oh,
heck of a
God.
lot to live up to, though. It's so much pressure, actually, you know? So
No.
specifically, actually, my background is in spirituality and perennial philosophy, going beneath the surface of the material world to find out what's really going on the most metaphysical level, and beneath our conventional and everyday sense of ourself to find out who we really are. And I actually run a course on death and bereavement and spirituality based on a book called In the Light of Death, which was a book of a friend and teacher of mine, Tim Freake, wrote some years ago. And really the aim of that was the recognition that if you go on the websites of these big bereavement counseling sites we have and type in things like near-death experience, after-death communication into their search bars, nothing comes up because it's just two separate worlds and neither the two meet. So it's really an attempt to bridge that and bridge it through perennial spiritual philosophy of looking at the kind of mystical experiences that people have in near-death experience as something that is, at least to some level, accessible to us all. And the mystics of throughout time and space have written about that. So that's what I do in this area.
It causes us to question everything. Like, what is really going on? Like, there's the play on the stage, and then there's the backstage. There's the behind the scenes. So, when most people hear the words deep state, they think politics, they think cabal, they think, but yours is more deep state
I
consciousness.
started using it well over 15 years ago, okay? And then in about 2016, Donald Trump picked up on the term. So he kind of copied me, right? But
Oh,
I was already
that's
all the way in at
wrong.
that point, right? So
Oh,
if anyone has a reason to
he has
dislike
to
me,
own everything.
I know. So indeed it was a reference to the depth within the deep state of consciousness, and it was also a reference to what goes on in our world in all sorts of different ways, from the sciences to histories, and there's often a deeper state of things than we appear on the surface. So it was really a sense of getting into the depths without necessarily being dogmatically conclusive about what we find, with having a certain openness to. So it's nondescript. There is just a deeper state. What we find there, we might all find slightly different things, but there's an openness to the term which I liked.
Oh, I think it's wonderful. Deep, there's the depth, and then there's the state. It makes perfect sense. It's just interesting how that's gotten used. But you're kind of an expert at helping people to seek for the truth beneath the disinformation or the misinformation or the confusion that might be deliberate. So, what are some things we can do to seek the truth? With the capital T.
Well, I think in a general sense, we can all do our very best to become aware of what we want to believe, what narratives might feel compelling to that part of us that gets drawn into feeling angry or very tribal. Am I on the red team or the blue team on this issue? And to step back into the more we can feel connected to a more authentic and deeper sense of self, the more secure we are to let things be as they are, whether they're relationships or job situations, or the thoughts in our own minds, that we can have a certain detachment. This might be the answer, that might be the answer. I could consider both. Maybe I think it's this one, but I'm okay because I exist as ultimately perhaps the witnessing awareness beyond those things that's foundationally secure in itself.
So I want to ask you something, and this might be controversial. People might hate me, and some of the 70,000 listeners might click off if they hear this. I hope they don't. But because there's me, Teresa, and Margarita, we're all kind of dream-centric. One thing that gives me peace, and I want to hear your take on this, is to borrow the Carl Jung perspective that everything in the dream, everyone in the dream, is an aspect of the dreamer. So there is no them. There is no they, there is no out there. So, and because we're always dreaming, even in our waking state, even if those people out there are just a speck in us, do you think there's a, it gives me peace. So that might be, I don't know, I'm curious about what you think about that.
Yeah, I think it can be an incredibly enriching way to live, to walk around as if we're having a kind of semi-lucid dream. We're sort of aware that we're dreaming. We think we might be, and the world can take on such deep, symbolic, rich meaning. I have known people can drive themselves a bit bonkers sometimes. Like if you take on too many metaphysical thoughts into your mind at one point, so you've got to be a bit careful with it. But it's certainly an enriching way to live, rather than a things happening by random chance and accident all the time. And certainly in terms of like the deeper relationships that arise for us and the more meaningful events that way, it's
Yes.
incredibly enriching and liberating to see it as an aspect of yourself manifesting in some way.
Well, speaking of
Empowering.
liberating, yes, back to you, Dr. Adam Rizvi. From what you've experienced, when you've experienced these 500 different deaths, and that makes you more than an expert on this phenomenon of seeing things from a deep state of consciousness and beyond the veil. What's your perspective on seeing kind of life as a hologram as opposed to a them and there and things so segmented the way we normally see them?
I think we're probably going to need several hours for that question alone.
Just have a few minutes. You could do it.
Let me see. First of all, Richard, thank you for sharing what you did. Actually, I don't get to talk about this often enough in the conversations I have, but that actually is my core intention with the book, that the game we're playing, the game all of us is playing, is waking up to the nature of who we really are, the true nature of who we really are, that which is eternal, that which never changes, that the ground that I was speaking of at the beginning. Death acts as a catalyst. Disease acts as a catalyst. When things fall apart, those are all catalysts for us to stop and say, well, wait a minute, something's not working. I'm chasing after rabbits, right? My attention is out there in the world trying to fix and do things, not recognizing that, who I am has nothing to do with the world out there. So the book really was a call. The book, Love Does Not Know Death, is a call for us to embrace death as a catalyst and to ask ourselves, okay, well, what is that? Who am I really in the face of death? Obviously not the body. That's the first level. Is who I am will continue on beyond the death of the physical body. But there's actually a level that Richard spoke to that I want to, not everyone will know what I'm talking about when I say this, but If you're open, Kelly, just for another minute to explore this
Please,
together.
absolutely, yes.
A human life will begin, be lived, have a peak, and then die. That the body, right? We call it a death when the body ends. There are micro deaths every moment. Every thought we have, the thought will arise, peak, crest, and fall, and then the thought ends. When an emotion arises, the emotion comes, it crests, it falls, and it ends. Every time something like that happens, every thought, every emotion, every event that happens in our life, there is an awareness that Richard spoke to. There's an awareness that doesn't change. And it doesn't matter what emotion it is. It doesn't matter what thought it is. It doesn't matter what is happening in the world. There is a part of you, the you that you really are, that is wholly unaffected by any of that. That's the eternal part of you. And Richard used the word witnessing awareness, that there's something to us. And when we start to recognize that that's our nature, we start to realize that the construct of what we think we are, like Adam Rizvi, is made up. You know, these, as you said, they're all holograms. We identify with it, but that's not who we really are. And there's a beautiful quote by, I think, Rumi in the Sufi tradition, where he says, "May you die before you die." And I find that so inspiring, because it's a call to that. It's wake up, die to the false little self that you think you are before you die, before the end of this lifetime. And that's a call to love for me.
Oh, I have a quick question for Vanessa, and I know we're getting close to the end here, but Vanessa, you talk about how your son Harry is a guide for you. And my curiosity about that is, so I've had many deaths, many friends, dogs, just, I don't know, hundreds of beings that I love died. And one night when my most precious dog at that time died, I was howling with grief. And my friend whispered in my ear, "What you really want," and I almost wanted to smack her, but I'm glad I took it in. She said, "What you're really wanting is to be connected with Woofy." That was the dog that died. "And you can't meet, you can't find her in from this state of consciousness. Go to a higher place and there she will be." So I just took a breath and I could feel her, but I couldn't feel her when I was raging. So what's your perspective on that and how you meet Harry?
Well, that's such a dilemma, because grief is a very dense energy. And yet, even if you believe you and you know you have to raise your vibration so they can lower theirs and meet you in the middle, it's tough, because grief is so heavy, and you know you need to get lighter. But there are moments when you can. But you can't stay there, and that's okay. So I always say, don't worry if it feels really intense sometimes. Just get up there when you can, and then you'll feel them. I feel Harry, he touches my hair, I feel him. So you can do it, but not all the time.
Not all the time, yeah. So it's like the seasons of grief, be where you're at, and maybe that's something that people can do while they're trying to comfort people during this time of year, if people are listening in real time coming into Valentine's Day. So back to you, Richard. What, from your perspective, I just want to give each of you an opportunity to just have one last little button, because before I hand it over to Teresa. So what's one last thing you want people to hear with regards to having their own deep state of consciousness regarding death and dying?
Just to follow up really on Adam's follow up. To me, I suppose, that these near-death experience states we read about, so we can access at least a portion of that by going within and finding, I think, the ultimate continuing bond of consciousness, that if we realize our identity at a deeper and deeper level and find that we are fundamentally connected, maybe even fundamentally one at that place, then we're never disconnected in life or death or in emotional distance or anything. And that's a really secure base to do anything else.
Thank you. Richard Cox, Deep State Consciousness Podcast. Vanessa May, one last phrase from you, word of wisdom.
Yeah, I think probably following on from what Adam says, love is everything. It continues beyond death. It grows, in fact. You know, when people say grief is love with nowhere to go, not true at all. Love has somewhere to go. It continues on.
Ah, oh, and that in her book is When Grief Takes Everything and also Love Untethered. Thank you so much for sharing your incredible beacon of wisdom and hope with all of us. And Dr. Adam Rizvi, last word of wisdom from you before we send you off to the other side of the veil of the
Meet on the
podcast,
other
not of
side.
life itself.
No, just an appreciation for Richard and Vanessa. This is a very rich conversation, and it seems like we are coming down to love being the most important factor.
Yes, it is. Ah, this is so rich, and I feel like what a gift. And Teresa Chung, thank you for starting this podcast with, and Johan, thank you for creating the podcast and the whole network. Teresa Chung, back to you.
Well, not all tears are an evil. Yes, I had to bring it back to Lord of the Rings. I'm so sorry, but I've just been mesmerized by you all. Margarita Kelly, my recurring dream co-host. I just feel so privileged to be on this astonishing platform that Johan has created, UK Health Radio. Vanessa, thank you from my heart. Richard, thank you from my heart too for your wisdom and courage. And Dr. Adam Rizvi, not that I want to pass, but if I do, I couldn't be more blessed to have a doctor, a good doctor like you by my side to help me on that final journey to the undying lands. And to you listening, wherever you are, whatever you're carrying, remember this: no one can take away your dreams. They can't die. They can change shape. They can move through loss and longing, but they endure. And love doesn't die either. It goes on. It finds new forms. It waits for us in ways we don't yet understand. And to underline that profound truth and to speak directly to your heart, going to close today's show with one of the most famous pieces of music of all time, a song so often played at funerals, and one I know will be played at my own because I cannot listen to it without knowing there is more to this life than meets the eye and that love never dies. So here it is, the immortal My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. Until next time, let's keep on dreaming, let's keep on loving, and let's remember that love does not know death.
Spaces between us, you have come to show you. Go on, near, far, wherever.